I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Rational fear contains strong, coarse language and traces of nuts. Rational fear recommends listening by an immature audience.
Tonight, Liberals start believing in climate change as they see it's the only way to prevent Labor rising to record levels. The Academy of Motion Picture and Arts and Sciences create the worst Oscars ever, or as we like to call it in Australia, the Logies. Yeah. And after months of reporting, shoddy tenders, self-dealing and conflicts of interest, the Coalition say the only thing that could convince them to launch a federal ICAC would be a job on the board of a mining company. This is Irrational Fear! Oh, fantastic. This is Irrational Fear. It's the show that tells you what you should actually be scared of. It's kind of like Dancing with the Stars, but with less dancing, less stars. We do rate about the same as Channel 10, though, so that's something to be proud of. Let's meet our fearmongers for tonight. Our first guest has a wit as sharp as her pencils, which is why she mainly works in ink. She's a Francophile, a Walkley winner. She's renowned for cutting straight to the core of any issue with a single picture. It's Nine's cartoonist at large, Kathy Wilcox.
Thanks. Hi.
I have to laugh because ever since Nine bought Fairfax, every time I think about that, you must be like the first cartoonist to join Nine since the guy from Hey Hey It's Saturday.
Yeah. This is my audition, really. I'm hoping that I'll branch into TV, doing the cartoons on the screen.
Oh, perfect. At the Today Show.
With a puppet, perhaps, alongside.
Yeah, good.
At Nine, are you comfortable? Do you say Fairfax or Nine around the office still?
I cannot bring myself to say the N-word, and I'm still talking about working for the organisation formerly known as Fairfax.
Tonight you're going to be touching very carefully on George Pell. I should have constructed that sentence a bit better. Will you, like Miranda Devine, go Catholic hunting tonight?
Well, I won't like Miranda Devine in the first place.
Excellent. Our next fearmonger is one of the funniest tweeters in Australia, breaking down society, politics and science, and of course food, which makes sense because he's also one of this country's most celebrated chefs. It's Adam Liao! Adam, you have probably Australia's best Twitter feed.
That is entirely not true.
I think so. And let me quickly go through here. Adam, earlier this week you tweeted a great meme about Parmigiana, and it went viral. And I can't help but think that you have really given this country an identity crisis about what to call a Parmigiana. Let's see the meme here. Top guy says, "I'm going for Parma." Bottom guy says, "It's Parmy or Parmy. Etymologically, a truncation of Parmigiana. A truncation is a form of colloquialism in an Australian..." what does that say? I don't know. Anyway, it's very funny. Look it up for yourself. I love it. The last line is Parmigiana itself is adjectival form of the Italian city Parma. Boom! Mic drop. Yeah.
What do people even say? I grew up in South Australia, and everybody in South Australia says Parmi. But what do people in New South Wales say? I think Victoria is pretty
I'm from
Parma.
I'm from Victoria, and it's Parma, and this whole thing is irritating me.
No. Really? Isn't Victoria, is it Parma?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I don't even know what that bit's about. What, like, yes, that's what we call it. Parmigiana. There's so many A's in it.
Yeah, it's I'll like, have the
it
fish
is
cakes.
Literally an I.
Parmigiana.
Parmigiana.
Look, you go down to fucking Lygon Street and tell them it's Parmy. Good luck.
When you shorten biscuit, is that biscuit?
No, it's Bicky.
It's Bicky.
Or Bicca in Melbourne.
I just want to make it absolutely clear, while we do have the man himself here, it's scallops, right? Not potato cakes.
I didn't even eat them. I have no idea what they're called. I think they're called potato fritters, to be honest.
Fritters?
What?
Oh. This is the whole show. Cancel everything else.
Tonight, you're going to be talking about the end of the two-party system. What kind of party would you create, Adam?
Parma United.
Ah! Excellent.
Not Parma United, I noticed.
Our next fearmonger tonight is an author of books. He's a broadcaster of afternoon radio. He's a blower of horns. He's a fellow worker in the Whimsy Factory and a personal hero of mine, James Valentine.
Thanks, Dan. Thank you.
James, I had many people online tonight demand you bring your saxophone tonight. Will we see it tonight?
No, you won't. The people do this. They go, bring your sax along. That'd be great. And if you bring it out and play it, it's about 20 seconds before they hate it. You know, like saxophone, great in the band, great with everybody else. On its own, they go, yeah, okay, that's enough. It's like the Careless Whisper guy, you know, guy that, it's like that.
Well, I mean, for younger people in the audience, I know Lewis and I, we probably came home from school, we used to watch you on television doing the afternoon show on ABC TV.
Well, you know, I grew up in a hippie commune and we weren't allowed TV, but yeah, go on.
But I went hunting for a clip of the afternoon TV show, the afternoon show on ABC TV.
Okay.
And there was a guy who's a really big fan, and he put a whole bunch of clips together. It's just that, look, I'll play it for you, and you will all see what part of the show he was a big fan of.
That's me, yeah.
Look, I don't want to hear anything more about it. The afternoon show's over, so it's off to Bertie Bars, okay? Get your jammies on, find your Mickey Mouse toothbrush from behind. And now, some short scenes on the afternoon.
Oh, so we just like the graphic.
Well, they are good graphics.
Sahida, at the end of September, the afternoon show will be going to Cairo, Egypt, in association with the Office of Multicultural Affairs.
No, we did. We went to India, I think. But anyway, for a while there, we were going to Cairo. But
I just liked the end graphic of
the
show.
The end. Yeah. Very odd.
And I can't help but think that we're in some kind of weird flat Earth cycle, because you of the 90s looks like Lewis Hobber of 2019.
Yeah.
It's like I see you and Andrew Denton, and I'm just like, one of you is my real dad. For sure.
Next up, we got Lewis Hobber. Lewis, you're basically a man who could put a picture of himself on Instagram and then basically start a meme where the whole world ridicules you but also creates their own thirst trap. Earlier this week, or 2 weeks ago, Lewis Hobber posted this picture on Instagram, which meant that thousands of other Australians all around the world saw it and then posted their own similar pictures. What is it like to create your own meme, Lewis?
It's really disturbing. I just thought it was a nice photo. And I'm now fully aware of the fact that I'm not allowed to do nice photos. That's there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of strangers posting black and white photos and tagging me in it over the last 2 weeks. It has been so weird. It's been so genuinely weird.
I did mine for you as well. And I wanted to make it a little bit hotter, so I put a little chili up my nose, which everybody, including Rosie Waterland, I think, was the first person to point out that it looks like a tampon up my nose. Yeah. Tonight, you're planning on talking about New South Wales politics and its war on festivals?
Yes, that's right. I'm trying to get back on brand. This was some real damage to my reputation. Now I'm going back to, like, Triple J Heartland. So war on music festivals. It's like my equivalent of Scott Morrison talking about stop the boats.
All right.
And it's like, let them eat pingers.
You're listening to Irrational Fear. It's like Q&A without misogynistic Canadians.
Irrational Fear. Your fear is rational.
Okay. First fear of the night, federal ICAC. Do we really need one? Is there any evidence of government corruption at all in the federal government? Now, I'm just going to paraphrase a fantastic Chaser article today. They carefully laid out everything for us. So in the recent weeks, the Coalition have been front and centre of a bunch of scandals. Ministers withholding evidence for investigations, ministers getting free travel paid by companies bidding on billion-dollar government contracts, ministers awarding half-billion-dollar contracts to a company registered at an island beach shack with direct relationships with that minister's sister. Put that together with Au Pairs, Reef Foundation, Stuart Roberts, internet bills, Parakilia, franking credits, and Foxtel's $30 million gift for no reason. Aside from all of these, is there any reason we should have a federal ICAC at all?
Yes, yes. I think in terms of an archive of misdemeanors, because it would be terrible if we forgot all these things that were happening, and if you had an ICAC, you'd have a good ready reckoner for how to be corrupt.
it'll show New Zealand the way.
I just think if we've learned one thing from the banks, it's that we should just let people regulate themselves. It always works. People love to do it.
That's right.
Lewis Hobber's going to be running for Indi as a Liberal.
The Lord gave man free choice, Dan, and I think that's what the lesson is, why we don't need an ICAC.
I just like to think that it's kind of funny, like when Labor does it, it's corruption. When the Liberals do it, it's called complement of interest.
Their own expertise. I'd keep a close eye. You know all the Liberals that have just resigned in the last month or so, the last coming after the election? Where are they all going to go afterwards? Oh. What job will they all go to? Just see where that happens. That might suggest that you could, I don't know if ICAC can follow up retrospectively. Oh, you've left, but you happen to get a job with the thing that you've been working with for the last few years.
They're not even that smart to do it quietly. When Ian McFarlane left, he was Resources Minister, and Tony Abbott blatantly said to the media, well, I hope the mining companies look after Ian McFarlane. They've been very good to him. He's been very good to them. And now he's the head of a lobby group out of China about mining resources.
But why would you be quiet about it? There are literally no ramifications for it.
Yeah, right. No, I was going to say Barnaby Joyce will go on to sperm donation or something like that for money.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole idea of having a inquiry into corruption assumes that the people doing it actually think it's corruption, but they don't. That is the legitimate business model of how it's actually supposed to work. And they go, this isn't corruption. This is just how it's done.
Well, what needs to happen? What is going to be the thing that gets us a federal ICAC? What do you think?
It is hard to imagine, isn't it? Because, we've had one in New South Wales, which they keep trying to close down, and it's, and then they got Ian McDonald, but then they managed to get him released again. So it is very hard to imagine what level of corruption could actually be any worse than what's going on here that might deliver an actual...
What we need is some sort of big corruption to, donate to fund some sort of anti-corruption. We need a mining equivalent, but just a corruption organisation.
A really corrupt lobby group.
Yeah, to fund the government well enough to investigate itself. Stick with me.
Well, Adam, you just kind of said that, it kind of flies under the radar. People kind of just take it for granted that it just happens. Matthias Cormann under fire last week. I don't know if you know the story. He personally called the CEO of Hello World Travel to book tickets to Singapore for a family vacation. The CEO booked the flights and never charged Cormann. At the same time, Hello World was getting a $1 billion contract from the government. It should also be noted that the CEO is also a high-level member of the Liberal Party as well. If you could call any CEO to get something for free, who would you call?
I've actually done this. I've done this. When Ziggy Stokowski, is that how you say his name?
Yeah.
Switkowski. When Ziggy was head of Telstra, I was having phone problems, and I did that thing where the best thing you can do is write to the CEO. Don't ring up the complaints line or anything. Just write directly to the office of the managing director. So I wrote to the office of the managing director. Worked a charm. Now maybe I did it on ABC letterhead. Maybe I mentioned a thing or two about, you know, but it did work. Like a week later, I've got like the head of New South Wales on the phone. Really? Are there problems with the phone line? We must get to that immediately. Yes, and it hasn't been working for a long time. We'd like a refund. Certainly have a refund. Like, that's absolutely sure. That's absolutely fine. Do you mind never mentioning this? No, I'll never mention it anywhere. Don't you worry. It'll never come up. Like, I can't imagine any circumstances where I tell anybody about that kind of behaviour.
And this is why we need a federal ICAC.
Yeah, I thought just openly tweeting about things was the next best thing.
It's,
you know,
the modern thing.
When something doesn't work in the house, the family just says to me, "Mum, can you tweet about this thing?" You know, and then you have the company, you know, at your feet saying, "What can we do? How can we fix this up for you?"
So you're a power broker for your family because you're an influential tweeter.
That's right. I never thought that I would, you know, that I would use my power in such a,
who would
a self-serving
have
way.
The cartoonist for Nine would have such power. Yeah,
yeah. The common thing irritated me. I wish I had a thought like you did, James, because I, as another ABC employee, I often think, like, we're not allowed to get anything for free. Anything that comes to us for free, big or small, we have to send it back. And it just irritates, because we also get paid a lot less than the government as government employees. And it irritates me that the only reason they didn't realise he was getting it for free is that he's already so rich that he doesn't need to get it for free.
Yeah.
I'm like, we get an ABC wage, we need it for free, and we still can't.
Yeah. Have you not noticed that particular injustice in the world? That
I'm just learning.
That rich people get everything for free. It's incredibly annoying. Have a car, rich person. Please, use my holiday home, rich person.
I feel very uncomfortable right now. Because I have a car sponsor and a chocolate sponsor and a pasta sponsor and all kinds of sponsors associated with my work.
Yeah.
To be on that other
that's right. National that's broadcaster.
Right. Oh, yeah, the rich, heady world of SBS.
I had a jeweller lend me some earrings because he in fact, it's my mum's jeweller and I'm like the CEO that he calls because he thinks that I have a tremendous amount of influence in the media, so he calls me about things that he thinks are conflicts of interest about one jeweller getting to do a thing over some other jeweller and it's quite funny. But he lent me a pair of earrings because he knew that I was going to be meeting Julie Bishop in Canberra a couple of years ago. And
nice.
He just said, "Could you just slip him a card? Just slip him a business card."
Well,
I did.
I managed to get the business card of Hello World CEO Andrew Burns, so I've got his number, and I called it, and I just had to leave a message, but this is his voicemail.
Hi, you've reached the phone of Andrew Burns, CEO of Hello World. If you're a government minister who is in urgent need of a family holiday, press 1. If you're Joe Hockey, what the fuck, mate? Where have you been? You still owe me one. Press 2. If you're a journalist from the fake news media calling about alleged impropriety between Hello World and the Liberal Party, our official response is this. This is nothing like the time Dastyari's trips were paid for by a Chinese education group. He was Labour. We're Liberals. It's different. If you want further comment, leave a message we can ignore. Thank you. Bye.
All right. On to fear number 2. The government is absolutely cooked. Absolutely. Here's something strange. Now, despite being made up of a whole bunch of rich white guys who all went to the same university, we have a minority government. Oh, no idea about that. Which means legislation, passing legislation is pretty difficult. It can be more difficult than the time I asked my mum if I could get blonde tips. That was just last week. She said no. It was very
she was right to do that.
I was going
to
say, isn't it the first time that a bunch of powerful white guys are a minority?
Yeah, I know. I should have done. You're a better joke writer than me. That was the joke I was going for. Yeah. It didn't quite roll out. I wrote it. I was just very rushed. All right. But here's the thing. The government legislation was passed, but it just wasn't passed by the government. It was passed by the crossbench and the opposition, who at the time were suffering a brief but severe bout of compassion. They decided that it actually would be okay if refugees who are sick on Manus Island, who can't be looked after on Manus Island, were transferred to Australia. That bill passed 36-34. The government lost, and a new law was made without them. The government lost. That's it. That's what we're talking about. That's right. Let's get this crooked media vibe on. To put it in perspective, that almost never happens. And when it does, it can prove fatal for the government. The government can lose confidence and they have to dissolve the government. In fact, the last time a government had to dissolve after a vote was lost was 1929. Now, comedian and friend of the show, Ben Jenkins, explained this in a very
eloquent Twitter feed. He kind of put it in perspective. He said this, is Ben's first tweet. Auspol nerds, if you're wondering what all this 1929 business is about, here's a quick explainer, a thread. And the next tweet is, in 1929, the PM was Stanley Bruce. In March of that year, on the floor of the House of Representatives, his dick exploded and died. And then he went on to say, hope this was helpful. So my question is, do we need a government at all?
This past Christmas was one of the best times of my life. And a lot of people are really on the LNP, the current government, for having so few sitting days between now and whatever happens when we have more sitting days. But it has been absolute bloody bliss. Not having to hear endless sound bites from every person talking about something that they don't even believe in. All through Christmas was like, I don't even have to think about politics anymore. And then all of a sudden, Q&A started and everything went to shit again.
I think one thing about this is that it's time to... You could actually rethink everything. See, like, I would be an advocate for new electorates, as in not geographic. Like, the stupid thing is that we have this 19th century notion that because I live next door to you, Dan, you and I should go and vote as a block.
Yeah.
I could be in a much more interesting electorate with you, and I don't live anywhere near you. You know what I mean? Like, the electorates could be reformed according to all sorts of other ways rather than just because you happen to be living around the corner. Made sense in about 1870. Doesn't make sense now.
James Valentine Mandering, we could call it.
I like it.
I've always been more of a in favour of choosing the leader more just like an annual lottery. May we just roll the balls, everyone's name is in there, you get a go for a year.
Yeah.
And then you just see what happens.
Yeah, yeah.
It could be you.
I was thinking, you know, I mean, I've often thought that a council of elders would be the way to do it, a bunch of wise old people.
I think there's enough fucking elders.
Well, that and there's not a lot of wise ones about among them too.
We already have a queen. Yeah, why don't we just give her a run? Like, I know we've had the whole separation of the royal part of everything and the government part of everything, but we're Australia. We can do whatever we like. So while we're still part of the crown, why don't you just have another go? See if you can do it better.
Yeah.
It
Libby, be in your last year, why not give it a crack?
Well, I think the great thing about Scott Morrison losing this vote is that now he's a lot like the Queen and that his role is largely ceremonial.
Excellent. Yeah. Fear number three. Paladin is on strike. Now, this afternoon, this is kind of a bit of breaking news. There's some news from Manus Island. I've been seeing tweets from people I know there who are saying that Paladin, which is the contractor that runs the detention centre there, is on strike. Now, for those of you who don't know who Paladin is, let me just quickly
That's literally everyone.
Yeah.
That's what's so sus about it.
Yeah. There are some people here who are on the internet all the time, so they've been following Alex Turnbull's tweets. So Paladin is a shady shell company charged with the job of running the prison camps on Manus Island on behalf of Australia. There's three of them there. They're run by an ex-soldier and his brother. Its headquarters up until 2 weeks ago was registered to a beach shack on Kangaroo Island. They get $20 million a month to run the camps. I've been there. It doesn't look like $20 million a month.
Very, very good canvas.
it's actually not good canvas. And there's no roads. There's nothing. It's really terrible. You think they would have roads.
Well, Dan, if it was $40 million a month, maybe we could get you some roads. But $20 million.
For $20 you'd want like a pool and a tennis court, a massage parlour. These are the things you want for $20 million. Now, much of the $20 million a month gets siphoned off to the brother of the Speaker of the House in Papua New Guinea that keeps it all in the family. The contract was awarded in 11 days because the last company that was running the Manus Island detention centres said they wanted to get out of the prison business. And it was a limited tender, which means only one company was invited to tender for it. And that company has an alleged connection with Peter Dutton's sister, who works with that company.
Which is a scary thought anyway.
Yeah.
That he has a sister?
There's more of them.
The minister tried to remove the contracts from being accessed by Freedom of Information requests and later deleted the details of the deal off a government website. And the staff who work at these three prison camps that are funded by $20 million a month of Australian money get paid $3.50 an hour.
That's muffin break levels.
Yeah.
Maybe they're just doing internships.
Millennials in Manus Island. They just, you know, so resentful. So this is all in the Australian Financial Review. Incredible reporting from the AFR over the last couple of weeks. But the people who work for Paladin are a little bit pissed off and have decided to go on strike. So this is okay if you're a worker, because, you know, who cares? You're only earning $3.50 an hour anyway. But if you are actually a refugee there, it's kind of bad news. There's no security, no one cleaning up, no one checking the plumbing, no one to look after you and your health while you're there in Australia's care. So,
and that's when the light came and they saw a solution, and that the refugees could suddenly be the ones who were running the refugee camp.
Gainfully employed.
Yeah. And they could run them to the conditions that would be nice, and they could use that money well, and they could all be happy.
Give them $20 million a month to
and
run their own camp.
We want to go and stay there because it would be such a nice place.
Yeah. It would be such a nice place.
Are you talking about Bali?
So anyway, on a scale of 1 to terrified, how scared are you of refugees coming to Australia to take your jobs, Lewis?
I mean, I'm always terrified of someone to take my job. It's very easy to do.
At the youth broadcaster. Who's coming down the line, Lewis, that might be young
anyone.
And sprightly?
It's like, can you stand in front of a microphone and ask people where the weirdest place is they've had sex? There it is. You work at Triple J.
Yeah, I'm terrified because, I mean, I work at the ABC as well. How keen would the ABC be to replace ageing white man with refugee? I mean, that's just so ABC, isn't it?
That is actually...
That's
current policy.
That's it. I just have to go and work for Andrew Bolt. I'll be straight up.
Well, last cartoonist that was on Manus Island, or Nauru, in fact, ended up getting refugee status and going to live in Norway. So whew, that was a close break to me.
Yeah, that's true.
The happiest country in the world.
Isn't this like we're at the sort of Trump level of crisis now and scandal, where it's just another one, so we kind of shrug a bit, whereas at any other point, one of these should have been enough to go, hang on, you know, terrible, all gone, resign, you're appalling. Now you kind of go, oh, so is this stuff okay now, is it? Like, you're not quite sure what to do with it.
And Marriage at First Sight is also on TV.
And Marriage at First Sight.
Well, I was there in January, and I actually got deported from Manus Island.
What did you do to get deported, Dan?
I went and hung out and made videos on a tourist visa. Apparently vloggers are journalists now. I said, no, but I'm a comedian. It was great.
Dan, are you an influencer?
No, I'm not an influencer. You're an influencer.
Like, how did you get caught as such? Like, what was that process?
Oh, I was filming the writer, Behrouz Bachani. We were filming in the Lorengal Hotel pool.
Doing a sketch? They were doing a comedy sketch with him, obviously.
That's exactly what I said. And
he's a funny guy.
He was a very funny guy. And he, as we were filming, as I was interviewing him, he said, oh, immigration are here. And I said, oh, for you? He said, no, for you. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, great. Yeah, sure. And then I got escorted to Port Moresby. When I got to Moresby, I got interviewed and I tried to explain I'm a comedian. And he's like, well, making jokes about refugees isn't very funny. And he said, that's very sad. And I'm like, that's my brand. Yeah. I try and make the funniest thing sad. And I looked at his sheet. He wrote down, funniest thing sad. And I was like, yes!
And is that PNG government deporting you? On Manus, is it PNG, not Australia?
It's PNG government. There's plenty of Aussies there, but... The PNG government shook me out. And the next day when I flew out, I got escorted through the border and I got taken to a special gate to stamp my passport.
Oh, so a good way to get through customs.
Very fast. If you need a quick exit out of PNG, make some comedy. I got stamped and the border guard said, huh. He looked at the computer, looked at me. I was like, oh, so you're on TV? And I went, well, you know. Not anymore, but sometimes you're on the internet. I'm like, do you have a YouTube channel? I'm like, yeah, so I mean, yeah, sort of, yep, this is great. He's like, our governments don't take too kindly the jokes. They don't get it. He stamped my passport. And away I went. I went home. It was great. So one of the jokes I did make there was this video. Do you guys want to see it?
Yeah.
Freshly made today for you.
You stuck the boat. You put us in a prison in a tropical island.
In 6 years of time, I had a lot of time to think, mostly about my mode of transport.
You want to go by boat or plane?
By plane.
Okay, good boy. We learned some Australian culture.
This cafe is shit.
Fair dinkum.
Fair dinkum.
Fair go.
Fair go.
After 6 years, we've been waiting to be processed, Prime Minister Scomo, so...
Ladies and gentlemen, James Valentine.
Oh, do I just dive up? Okay, so this is we were asked to do a bit of a rave about something. So this is a rant that I did upon the radio yesterday. I just said, look, if you're 40 years of age and you find these words coming out of your mouth, I don't know about the young people. Young people today, I saw these young people. What's with the young people? If those words come out of your mouth, march to the bathroom, stare in the mirror and go, you're old, dickhead. You are now an old person. You are an old person who just started criticising young people. That is what old people do, and you've just reached that age. So for some of you here, you mightn't have got there yet, but some of you may have already said, that's not music, that's just noise. And that is what every 40-plus-year-old says to every young person in every generation and has done forever. I only had to start talking about this for about 3 minutes and about six people texted me the quote from Socrates in 400 BC where Socrates says, oh, fuck those millennials. And I was inspired to this by the muffin break woman who, you know... Just, oh, gee, they're just terrible, they're just feckless, they're awful, they won't turn up. I mean, some of them don't think work's a priority, and I mean, some of them just won't knock on my door and volunteer to work for free. Can you believe that out of those young people? That is just so terrible. Now, I have several theories about this. One is that I think what happens is that there are some young people, there's plenty of young people, we know them right now, and you may have been one of them, who at 23, you're hardworking, you've got your degree or you've done whatever, you've done your apprenticeship, you get your truck, you go to work, you apply for jobs, you work hard, you know, 28, you get married, you have a kid, and then at 40, you've got this sort of drunk teenager and go, who the fuck is this? You know, where did he come from? This is appalling. What sort of, is this what the young people are like now? That's just shocking, you know. Then there's other young people, other people who at the same sort of stage, they've had a good 4 or 5 years of boozing and going crazy and being generally nuts. They get to 40, 45 and they've completely forgotten all that. Just all gone. No, that wasn't me. I never did anything like that. So what I like to do is every now and again is just remind people, well, I feel that myself, I fit neither of these categories. I have a very clear memory of what a dickhead I was and what an awful young person I was because I was that person till about 35. It was a very extended period of being a young turd. And I was arrogant, I was lazy, I was, you know, like, as a young person, I was either working as a musician or when there weren't gigs around, I'd work as a waiter. How many shifts do you think I didn't turn up to because I got a gig as a musician? Quite a few, you know, quite a lot. What was my main kind of occupation if I wasn't being a musician? Smoking pot. What was my main occupation during being a musician? Smoking pot, you know. Like, it was a drug-fueled environment where we were all off our brains, crazy and nuts, and I was in that mode for about a decade, which meant I was an idiot the whole time. And so I have a sort of general sense of, like, even when I moved out of being a musician and moved into to working for children's television, I wasn't very different. As some viewers would notice, and maybe remember, I used to do a segment on that where I'd invite kids to write in, to send in an appalling recipe, something really horrible, you know, a concoction of foods that I'd mix up and then I had to eat it on the show. It was called Monday Munchies. Wow, how did you get that? And there was occasionally a letter from Lismore that would go, I know what you're on about, mate. You know.
So my sort of sense of whenever I start to go, you know, oh, that's just music, you know, that's not music, that's noise, or you young people are idiots, I just go, guess what? They're young. They'll pretty soon turn into 30-year-olds with kids and bank balances and mortgages and all the rest of it. It's okay. They'll be fine. While you're looking at your feckless one, there also appears to be enormous, you know, the universities are overflowing. We've got an Australian Olympic team. We've got people anxious to play cricket for the nation and all the rest of it. Everything seems to be fine. So next time you find yourself doing that, go to the bathroom, look in the mirror.
Yeah. Lewis, you talk to young people all day on radio.
Yes.
Are they as entitled as the lamestream media suggests they are?
I'd say after the last week, they're entitled to a few free muffins, the very least. I can't believe the muffin break thing. Also, I'm writing down Monday Munchies, by the way. It's a great idea for a segment for Triple J.
Adam, is that an appealing segment for Destination Flavour?
You know, we don't tend to do too many weird foods on Destination Flavour because they just don't tend to work on television. But certainly I could see it happening.
Destination
on the radio. It worked a treat on television. I had to eat the shit. It was awful.
Destination Stoned Flavour, which was just you being like, I took a bit of salsa and I put it on a salada. Yeah,
unfortunately, the SBS relationship with Vice has very recently ended. So
there's a lot of industries that that media claim that millennials have completely destroyed, loads of them. What is the untouched industry that millennials have yet to disrupt?
Aged care.
Yeah, you got a point there. Yeah,
I was going with used car salesmen. You don't seem to run into a millennial. That you run into a millennial in the real estate world. Fuck, they're annoying, actually.
Every generation of real estate agents are trash.
Yeah, that's right. But the young ones will be this. They'll have pulled up in the Audi, very sharp, got the whole suit thing going on. Very, very annoying. But in the used car area, everyone's still 57.
You know? We're all into used skateboards.
Yeah, that's right.
This is Irrational Fear. We got more blood on our hands than Pauline Hanson's door. So, as you know, Kathy Wilcox is here, but I should explain why she's here, because Alice Workman called me up about 4 hours ago and said she's really sick and she can't make it. What was that?
She's getting sued.
She's getting sued. Yeah, she also said she had lost her voice. I don't think she wouldn't mind coming here and getting sued at the same time. She loves a chat. She's been getting sued for a long time, so it's okay. But we do have Kathy Wilcox here, and I just thought it'd be great to go through some of Kathy's greatest hits when it comes to George Pell, since it's the news that just broke a few hours ago that George Pell has been charged. Rosie,
yeah.
Bigging up Pell. All right, so Kathy, let's go through some of your work about George Pell.
Yeah, I think of it as taking a trip down Nightmare Lane, really.
Let's have a look here.
So,
this is going to be great for the podcast. So I'll read out the titles. Heard no evil, saw no evil. Evil's not of much interest to me.
Yeah, that's when he was asked why he had not paid any attention to the complaints of priests in Ballarat abusing children, and he seemed, you know, quite happy to be unaware of it and uninvolved, and showed his complete coldness and lack of compassion.
In what year was that?
That was about 2014, maybe.
All right, let's have a look. Here's another one.
So this is just the ongoing sort of relationship between the church and the state, where they're very happy to separate this church and state to be able to make their own rules about some things. So here's the government person saying to the clergyman, so you'd like us to continue funding your organisation that excludes atheists, Jews, gays, single parents, adulterers, etc.
That is correct.
You understand that some of this money would come from atheists, Jews, gays, single parents, adulterers, etc.?
Of course, we're a broad church.
Yes. So, yes, that separation only goes so far.
Here's one. This is that Richard Dawkins?
Ah, the Dorkster, yes. The only thing wrong with, you know, with arguing against Catholicism is that you end up sort of having an atheist doing the arguing, and the worst kind of atheist has got to be Richard Dawkins.
Oh, man.
He's so bad for the brand.
He was terrible. I remember seeing him on Q&A. He was quite woeful quite disrespectful, really.
Yes.
He's pointing to George Pell saying, you're wrong, and George Pell says,
So, sitting on the wealthy, powerful, impenetrable, tradition-bound, infallible institution.
Here, I love a pencil sketch. This is clearly one that didn't make it through to the editors.
That's right. Sometimes things get proposed and they just don't end up making it onto the page. So
you've got two characters here. Who are the characters?
Well, one of them looks like the Pope before Francis, Cardinal Ratzinger, what his name was.
Senator Palpatine.
Senator Palpatine. Yeah. And I think that there was some story about condoms being distributed in the Vatican or something like that. And so here's one of his... priests going, "Oh no, Your Holiness, I can assure you these won't be used for contraception." Because they don't believe in contraception.
Spicy.
So anyway, I don't know why, but they didn't print that one. So.
It would have been good in Picture Magazine or The Post. All right. Why do priests wear flowing robes?
To cover a multitude of sins. And so if you have been listening to the radio today, that is just too literal and horrible. I know, sometimes it's a cheap shot and a throwaway line, but yeah.
Peter Dutton on one side and a priest on the other, and the headline is "The Separation of Church and State Sanctioned Abuse," and they both say together,
Come with me. Yes, because the state is just as good at abusing little kiddies.
Now, this is a puppet cartoon, right? So this is a very different style to kind of the ones that you're... The big set pieces.
The big ones. So I mostly
do
the big
capture,
ones.
How do you go about capturing such a huge idea in such a small spot?
Well, I figured out quite a long time ago that when you're only working in a square, in a column, so it's about sort of 4 to 5 centimetres square, there's not a whole lot of room for elaborate artwork and detailed drawing and so forth. So just capturing the essence, usually it's accompanying an article, so you're capturing the essence of the article, taking it, you know, a few steps beyond if possible, if I can do that, and just saying the essential, and a few words can do it.
All right, here's another pocket one. Welcome, Brother George. This is Pope Francis welcoming George Pell to out in the Vatican.
Yeah, when Pell was invited to go to the Vatican to supposedly clean up the finances, I saw that cleaning up the slops would have been really rather more like it. And now we look back on that with different eyes and think what he was being given to do was to stay well away from trouble back in Australia.
All right, here we go. Here's a classic. This is one that's quite famous. You've got three confessional booths varying in size. The first one says, "Father, forgive me, for I have sexually abused a child." The next one says, "Father, forgive me, Father, for I have concealed a child abuser." And the biggest one says, "Forgive me, Father, for I have protected a priest who concealed a child abuser." It's like a Russian doll situation.
Exactly, and it's that... spiral logic of so much of religious tradition and rules that means that they are unable to be accountable because they are accountable only to themselves, because they, you know, it's like Tim Minchin's song about it, you know, it's a good book because it's a good book because it says it's a good book, and a good book would say it's a good book, and the good book, and so on.
Yeah. David Marr has an extraordinary priest in The Guardian today, and one of his lines was... he didn't have anyone to answer to because there were no votes cast for him. He was just appointed by the Pope. That's my David Marr impression. Very happy with that.
Yeah.
And finally, this one. So we've got Pope Francis talking to clergy. We must look deeper into our hearts and admit to ourselves where the responsibility for child abuse in the Catholic Church lies. Luckily, we have Satan to blame.
Yes, so that was in the paper today on the strength of Pope Francis's statement that these abusers, these terrible abusers in the church, were tools of Satan. Well, they were definitely tools, but you know, whether of whether of Satan, or you know, at what point were they actually going to take you know, be accountable and take responsibility themselves. And there's one more cartoon.
This is the last one in here.
You are getting the sneak preview because this one's in the paper tomorrow following the news today regarding Cardinal Pell.
All of a sudden this has turned into Tony Delroy's Tomorrow's News Today.
Haven't even tweeted it. It's not even 7:30 in the morning yet.
Tomorrow's News Today.
It's just the institution, really, and the great man fallen, although...
All right. Please thank Kathy Wilcox. That's great, Kathy.
Thank you.
I'd find that a weighty responsibility, you know? Like, if I have to delve into that and make any sort of comment or take calls from people, it feels weighty. To have to distill that moment into something for the paper that's going to be there and going to represent so much of how people feel and all that sort of stuff, I'd find that a weighty responsibility.
Yeah, I'm Catholic, so I would get phone calls from all sorts of relatives.
From the family.
I'm so weirdly irreligious, as you know, like, growing up in a, like, a literal commune. So, like, I don't know what it's like. What do Catholics think? What's the vibe? Is it high?
No, I don't think so. I don't know. I haven't been around in a while.
I went to a Catholic mass. Like, most of my family's Catholic, not the ones I married into. I went to a Catholic mass on last Christmas Eve, and it was somber. And they were, you know, seeking forgiveness of the... Like, it was quite impressive how... disturbed they were, how disturbed the priest was by it all. And that was kind of the theme of what they talked about. It wasn't sort of, there was no glossing over at this particular one. It was sort of like, things are terrible, we've done terrible things. That was the general tenor.
Yeah.
Even though facing reality isn't really what religion's about a lot of the time.
Well, I think there's
it?
Often a difference between like the big Vatican institution and some individual priests. You can go somewhere and they'll be great.
And that's right. And there's a lot of great people who are in those institutions who are just shocked at what's happened as well. So, you know, their whole world has collapsed around them. Now, one of the great friends of Cardinal George Pell was inexplicably Alan Jones. I don't know why. And last week he was forced to apologise to Malcolm Turnbull. Did anybody see this? He was forced to give an apology to Malcolm Turnbull. Did anybody hear it? I'm glad no one did.
I have a Google alert set for Alan Jones' forced apology, and it pings pretty often.
I actually took a screen. That was going to be this title card, the Alan Jones Google. Alan Jones apologises too. And it's like, there's a list of people. Louise Herron, Julia Gillard, blah, blah, blah. Basically, a lot of women. I think Malcolm Turnbull's the first man he's had to apologise to in a while.
Yeah, I think that says something, don't
you? Anyway, if you didn't hear it, I caught it earlier. Do you guys want to hear it?
Yeah.
All right, here is Alan Jones apologising.
So, Alan, if climate change is real, then why is it snowing in the Northern Hemisphere in the middle of February? I mean, what happened to summer?
You're too right there, Mildred. Stick on the line, and thanks to our friends at the Mineral Council, we'll send you out a lump of clean coal that you can cuddle at night to remind you of all the cool things coal does for humanity. Coal, it's organic.
2GB 873.
Would you get a load of this? It's been made known to me that I may have said something again about someone again that requires an apology again. God. My lawyers have made it absolutely clear to me that if I don't apologise to this person, my employer, Macquarie Media, may not renew my multi-million dollar contract. Oh, can you believe it? It's absurd. I'm a shareholder. I pay their bills so they can pay my defamation fines. God, I wouldn't mind a franking credit on those shares. Okay, here goes. I, Alan Jones, unreservedly apologise for calling Malcolm Turnbull a traitor to the country last Friday. I went too far, just like the time I tried to audition for Evita. There you go. You happy? God. Traitor. That's weak. I've called Malcolm Turnbull worse things. I once said living under a Turnbull government is the reason why parents stopped vaccinating their kids. I once said Turnbull had less charisma than a pile of sticky damp socks. That was a good one. I once said Malcolm Turnbull is like mother's Christmas cake. It's rich, no one asks for it, but you're forced to swallow it whole. Oh, God. And no one asked for an apology there, did they? No. Then again, my contract wasn't up for renewal. Oh, God. The only other apology I'd like to make today is to you, dear listener. Because of the apologies I've just made, I wasn't able to fit in the latest song from Anthony Collier's Christmas in July album. Oh, what a voice! Oh, it's unapologetically great. Stick with us. The Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, joins us to tell us which travel company owned by a senior Liberal Party official you should choose when booking your own offshore detention getaway.
You're listening to the Alan Jones Breakfast Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, Adam Liao!
This is entitled, The Party is Over. Politics used to be so easy. a bunch of white guys in advanced middle age from whatever side of the aisle and fresh from the Qantas Business Lounge in identical navy suits would get together and they'd start by saying things like, "Hello, John. Good to see you, John. Hope you've been well, John." And then they'd decide which graduate of Sydney, Melbourne or Adelaide Law School got to be a Member of Parliament, a Senator or even Prime Minister. And that's what we call merit. And then we'd all go and vote for them, because the silly part of democracy is that even though they're the ones who've already dealt with the difficult part of the whole merit process, it's actually up to us to think who to vote for. But luckily, we don't have to think too hard, because the merit guys tell us what's important, and sometimes it's not what our tiny non-meritorious brains think is important. You may think that the 32% of the population that are white men, who commit nearly 60% of the violent crime and statistically just about all of the murders, would be important, but it's not. What's important is the 0.1% of the population that is of African heritage who commit less than 1% of the crime. And so you see how it can be very, very confusing. And you may also think the important issue is the impending heat death of the entire world. But actually, the important issue is electricity prices. And you may think that electricity prices are high because of government mismanagement and staggering policy failures over decades, despite Australia being rich in resources and having absolutely perfect conditions for the generation of both traditional and renewable energy. But no, power prices are high because of wind farms. At the end of the day, it was great that they told us what to think about, because it saved us the hassle of having to think about a lot of things. A group of former lawyers named John was called a party. And when they chatted to a journalist, they decided what was important. That was called a narrative. And a narrative was what you used to win an election. But then something happened. We all got these things, iPads and smartphones and social media. Instead of calling your mum or your best mate, we started click-clacking away and talking to complete strangers. And in a couple of years, instead of getting your information from the guy called John in the red shirt or the guy called John in the blue shirt, or from the journalist who John spoke to, or from your mum who read the thing that the journalist wrote who John spoke to, we started to get our opinions from everywhere else. And that sucked. Because, you see, John understood that the more opinions you have, the harder it is to find someone who's going to agree with all of them. So say you want to buy a house in Sydney, and you're pretty fired up to get rid of the old negative gearing because debt funding in the Sydney housing market has driven up prices so that only rich people can afford them. But then those bloody rich people aren't even paying taxes, they're getting franking credits from investing in Australian securities, so now you want to get rid of that too. But then you think for a moment and you're not quite sure if all the rich people pulling their money out of Australian securities aren't going to drop all of those dollars back into the investment properties. So now instead of debt funding the property market and equity funding Australian securities, we're just switching it around and equity funding the property market and debt funding Australian securities. So now you might vote for the LNP. But they have a woman problem, and that's a deal breaker. So then you might vote for the Greens because socialism's not so bad, but they've got a woman problem too, and it might actually be an even bigger woman problem than the LNP woman problem. So what's left? Labour. Or maybe the idea of getting Bill Shorten to mimic human emotion every day for the next 4 years is your absolute number one deal breaker. Or maybe you're in the US and you think Donald Trump is great, and I mean, you're not really racist, but he does make a lot of good points about how brown people are bad. And even he, if he is a bit racist and a sexual abuser and his own wife called him a rapist, racism isn't really a deal breaker for you because the real problem is socialism and healthcare. So now you're a Democrat. And that should be the most united party in the history of politics right now. Because sure, dividing yourself down the middle in 2016 might have made the worst person in the entire world your president and brought about the rapid decline of the American empire. But now you've learnt your lesson. Because in 2020, it is Bernie or bust. Wait, what? Okay. He's an unconventional guy with some crazy ideas, but you just didn't like the way that Hillary Clinton or Elizabeth Warren or Kamala Harris are always lecturing you in their big angry woman voice, even though you're a big strong boy. Or maybe you're in the UK and Brexit has torn the Tories apart because, say you accidentally walk into a restaurant and you order a shit sandwich as a joke, but then you actually receive a sandwich made of shit. There is a limit to how delicious you can reasonably tell someone that tastes as you slowly and sadly eat it. And then UK Labour is equally baffling because with a Tory Prime Minister who is essentially dancing awkwardly while backing into a series of knives repeatedly reciting Et tu, Brute, Jeremy Corbyn's best political manoeuvre would be a long holiday in the Maldives. But yet, he couldn't stop himself from being a tiny little bit anti-Semitic. So the more opinions we hold, these days we live in an age of fine bespoke opinions, and every single one we love as if it were our own. And the more opinions we hold, the more we surround ourselves with people who agree that those opinions are the only true and correct opinions, the more convinced that we become that we are not only correct but morally insurpassable. It used to be very simple. Throwing children into the sea is bad, and therefore I know where my vote is going. But these days, try and find a party or a politician who agrees with you on even the top three things that are absolutely a no-deal deal-breaker for you. It's all but impossible. And try uniting a country of millions around one set of opinions. Forget about it. The party is officially over.
Yeah, Adam Liao! That was great, Adam. Here's the thing. The polls don't look too good for the coalition. They're behind 47 to 52. However, if you look at preferred prime minister, Scott Morrison is absolutely killing it. He's got 43% and prime minister... And Bill, I almost said Prime Minister Bill Shorten. Oh, my God. And Bill Shorten's 35%. That's 43 to 35. Why do Australians hate Bill Shorten so much?
Yeah, it is sad. What did you say? They're doing an impression of an emotion every single day.
Mimicking human emotion.
Mimicking human emotion.
They think he's gotten a lot better. They called it with Hillary, what do they call it? The authenticity gap. He's got like a big one.
Yeah. Has anybody met him? Like, yeah. Is he one of those people that up close is a lot better?
He's totally normal until the moment you turn on a microphone. Yeah. It's really eerie. Like, I've been in a room with Bill Shorten. I've been this close to him and I've been like, "G'day, Bill, Lewis, nice to meet you." He's like, "G'day, Lewis, good to meet you." I'm like, "What the fuck?" And then I was like, "We're about to go on air." And he's like, "Great." And I'm like, "And we're here with opposition leader Bill Shorten. Bill, how are you?"
Fig.
I'm happy to be here.
You know what I was saying?
It's like, what happened to you in the last 10 seconds?
Well, also, if he became Prime Minister, could anyone imitate him? Could anybody? Can you imitate Bill Shorten?
Yeah, so who's the Anthony Aykroyd to Bill Shorten?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you just,
I'd love to see Adam do it.
Imitating Scott Morrison's easy enough. You just shout a whole lot. And imitating Peter Dutton's all right. You just kill yourself and then still stand out there and sort of...
But this is the cartoonist dilemma too, isn't it? Like, do you look at Bill and, like, do you have the big ears?
He's just kind of a bit balloony.
The guy you could get to do the impressions is the guy that does the travel centre ads. You know, the airline captain with the hat? He's Bill Shorten. I'd ask because he is Bill
Shorten. Realise he has a twin brother. His twin brother could have a fantastic career in imitating Bill Shorten.
I didn't know that. He has a twin brother.
He has a twin brother. They're not identical, but they are twins.
The things we don't know about Bill Shorten.
Yeah.
How do people not know that he has... His name is Bill Shorten. He has a twin brother named Bob Shorten.
What?
Bill and Bob.
How do people not know this? That is absolutely true.
Is that real?
They are Bill and Bob Shorten. No, that I think 100% true.
No, you're confusing it with the flower pot man. You've got
How do people not... And this man wants to be our Prime Minister.
I feel like he should tell people, like, I like him more now I know that he has a twin brother called Bob. Yeah. He should tell everyone.
Bring out Bob. Bring out Bob. Bring
out Bob. But Bob would front up and he'd say, "Oh, hi. I didn't ever get a rut life in politics because Bill's the one with the personality."
You know, this is literally the most interesting thing about Bill Shorten. And you think, you find out something like Bill Shorten has a brother named Bob Shorten. He's going to be whacking it off the ball or something. He is the most boring human being on the planet. Yeah, he's like a financial planner in inner suburban Victoria. It is very disappointing.
Well, who did the...
We need to get him on the show.
Who did the sketch? Somebody did a sketch on air. It was two on YouTube or something. It was two women being PR people saying, vote for Chloe Shorten's husband.
Really good. Really good stuff. Did you guys see... I made a sketch this week and put it out online. It was... I just asked people in the street who they thought the Prime Minister was. And nobody knew.
It was Bondi, though, wasn't it?
Is it worth playing it? Do you want to play it? Here we go.
Who is the Prime Minister of Australia?
Last time it was John Howard. I don't know who it is at the moment, to be honest. Who? Scovo? I honestly don't know.
Good question.
Oh dear.
Oh, I don't know at the moment.
It could be Shorten or could be the other guy. What's his name? I can't even remember his name. I don't even know his name.
Malcolm Turnbull.
Not Malcolm Turnbull, and I can't think of his name.
No, it's not. It's... No, I got that wrong.
I was going to say James Cameron.
That's a tough one, actually. Yeah, I don't know. Last one I heard about was John Howard. No one really makes a big deal about it anymore.
Oh, my God, I actually don't know.
Yeah, that's...
Like, it was Kevin Rudd, John Howard, then nothing.
I don't know. No idea.
Everyone's talking about, is it Julia Gillard at the moment? Which one's the one that shut down all the music festivals?
I actually don't know. I don't know. It changes so much.
Gladys,
yeah. Everyone's talking, like, complaining about her at the moment.
Yeah. There you go.
I love it when the guy said Scovo, like it was an iced Vovo.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I want to play a quick game with you now. Let's play the popularity contest with Bill Shorten. It's a simple game. I'm going to read out something, and I want you all to tell me, the royal you, to tell me whether it's more or less popular than Bill Shorten. So it's going to be a bit like The Price is Right, okay? So first of all, more or less popular than Bill Shorten, polygamy!
More
or less?
More.
More popular?
Does it involve Bill Shorten? Polygamy is... So Bill Shorten's popularity approval rating is at 35%. Polygamy is only 17%. So...
Okay.
What about human cloning?
More or less? Well, it already has happened. He's got a twin brother. It's already happened.
Human cloning is also less popular. 11% of people approve of human cloning. Okay. What about ghosts?
Oh, less popular. Less it's popular. Going to be less popular than
less
ghosts.
Less popular than ghosts. It's a dead heat. Ghosts.
Ghost
approval rating are 31%, according to Gallup poll. 31%, only 4 points behind Bill Shorten. Yeah. Is something that are spectres. Spectres. All right, what about a 2004 Mark Latham?
Oh, easily.
More popular
than Bill.
More popular?
He would be more popular.
He was.
Mark Latham
is
more
sexy
popular
Mark
than
Latham.
Bill
Shorten.
Is that sexy Mark Latham?
It's sexy Mark Latham. He is 39% more popular. Yeah. What about Tanya Plibersek? More.
He's less popular. No, she's more popular.
She's more popular than Bill Shorten.
Yeah.
What about Donald Trump?
He is so popular. He is really, really popular. Nah.
He's got an approval rating of 42%.
Oh,
Donald
shit.
Trump is more popular than Bill Shorten.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, there we go. There you go. What about Lewis Hobber?
Really.
Well, Lewis Hobber!
He's more popular than Bill Shorten.
What a way to take the microphone, being like not clapped as being less popular than Bill Shorten. I was going to talk about something else. Now the whole thing's about fuck you. Can I just get a little show of hands? Who's been to a music festival here in the last 5 years? Okay, that's good. It's better than I was expecting, frankly. So that's great news. See, I told you, fuck you, I'm coming back at you. All right. Over the years, governments in this country have declared war on many things. There was Howard's war on terror. There was Abbott's war on red tape. There was Gillard's war on misogyny. And I sometimes like to guess who we'd be at war with if Mark Latham had won an election. Maybe the moon. And as wild as that would have been, it would still be less insane than the New South Wales war on music festivals. Yes, the Berejiklian blitzkrieg on fun rages ever on. A feb fast that never ends. If you missed this story, a bunch of music festivals in New South Wales have been forced to cancel because of new regulations. The government can now tell a festival how many police they're required to have, which they then need to hire off the government. In one case, the festival cancelled when it was told 1 week out that it would have to hire an extra $200,000 worth of cops. And if you're thinking that telling people how much of a thing they are required by law to buy off you sounds like a good business model, you're right, it is. It is getting the tick of approval from Shark Tank. If you or I did it, it would be called racketeering. The most jaunty of crimes. It feels really strange to live in a place where it is a vote winner to attack festivals. Festivals! In any other country, the word itself invokes a sense of community and fun. And to wage a war against music. If you're writing an 80s film or rock opera and you need a villain to do something cartoonishly evil, they clamp down on music. We're in Footloose. If Gladys Berejiklian gets re-elected on an anti-music platform, then she might as well just do a victory speech in a coat made of 101 Dalmatians. No one here cares. Not you, them, the trash out there. You guys are beautiful. And if you're listening at home, also beautiful. So apart from the festivals that have already been cancelled, like Mountain Sounds and Sci-Fari, a bunch of other festivals like Laneway have announced they might have to cancel next year's festival because of these new regulations. Now, in 15 years of doing Laneway in Sydney, two people have had to go to hospital. In 15 years. That's less people dying than in a Sydney Theatre Company matinee. Their hearts just give out when they say Hugo Weaving. He's very good. He's electric. And if you're a Gen X or Boomer thinking that the loss of a festival like Sci-Fari doesn't really affect you, I would like to remind you of this famous poem. First, they came for Sci-Fari. But I didn't speak out because I didn't like hardstyle trance. And then they came for Laneway. And I didn't speak out because I didn't like fun in tight places. But then they came for Byron Bay Blues and Roots Festival. And it was too late because I didn't say anything. And now how will I see Vicar and Linda Ball? That's right, even Bluesfest, the one you people love, has announced that it might leave New South Wales. That's going to decimate the slide guitar industry. And I don't expect music festivals to be everyone's number one voting issue. But New South Wales let a government tell them when they could and could not buy alcohol. It goes against everything I know about this country. At this point, the only thing I can think of that would get Sydneysiders actually angry is a war against F-45. I don't know what to do. What can I do? Can I re-pitch music festivals in a way that boomers might understand? We know boomers think drugs are bad. I mean, they did it in the 60s, obviously, but now it's us, not them, so it's bad. They know that we know that boomers think young people never talk to each other because we're always on our phones. Well, music festivals solve all these problems. The reception's always really shit, or the 4G's jammed with people using Instagram. We can't use our phones, and after a few caps, we love to talk to each other. Look, old people, the enemy is your friend. I don't know, maybe New South Wales is right. Maybe we should just cancel fun. Let's just stay in every weekend, and once a year we'll spend all our savings to go to the Domain to see whatever's left of Fleetwood Mac. Break the chain. Once Sydney is completely given up, we can segregate the entire population of Australian cities by age bracket. At 20 years old, you'll be forced to move to Melbourne, where you'll actually be allowed to have a good time. At 30, you'll move to Brisbane to settle down, get married, get sad, get divorced. You'll spend your 40s in Adelaide drinking wine and getting into cycling.
At 50s, the Gold Coast for tanning and tax breaks. And then finally you'll turn 60 and you'll be ready for Sydney. A retirement village with no young people and no music. Just cops and Messina. It'll be our Florida. Humid and full of people you wish would die but won't. And when all the septuagenarians... Fuck, I knew I shouldn't have written that word down. It's harder to say with no teeth. You'll get there eventually. And when all the septuagenarians commemorate the day they won the fun war, they won't have a minute's silence. They'll have a lifetime of it.
That's it for Irrational Fear. Please thank our fear mongers for tonight. Kathy Wilcox, Adam Liao, Lewis Hobber, James Valentine, DJ Diabolical, Rosie Waterland. Irrational Fear is recorded live on stage at Giant Dwarf. Until next time, there's always something to be scared of. Good night!
Don't forget to unplug your set.
Irrational Fear.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from L.A. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.